A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be talking with Chuck Michelle from the California Rifle and Pistol Association, co-founder of the Second Amendment Law Center as well. News out of California. It's not huge news yet. It could be really bad news for gun owners. You know, Duncan versus Bonta, that is the case dealing with California's ban on so-called large capacity magazines. And as expected, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals recently overturned a lower court decision that found that ban to be unconstitutional, which sets up the possibility that not only will California's law banning the sale of quote-unquote large capacity magazines be enforced, but the California law that bars possession of these magazines would be enforced as well. That's been on hold, actually, for a while. But the California Rifle and Pistol Association is working to make sure that that stay remains in place while Duncan is appealed up to the Supreme Court. So I want to talk about that with Chuck. Also want to get Chuck's thoughts on this new Second Amendment task force announced by Attorney General Pam Bondi. As well as, again, what Chuck thinks might be going on with the Snopes case there at the Supreme Court. So without any further ado, take a look and a listen to our conversation with Chuck Michelle from the California Rifle and Pistol Association. Chuck, it's good to have you on the program, sir. Thanks so much for joining me again.
Always a pleasure, Cam. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and a lot of stuff to talk about. So let's get started here with the latest in Duncan. That's the case dealing with California's magazine ban, the Ninth Circuit. Not completely unexpected, but ruling against gun owners, overturning the lower court decision that found that ban to be unconstitutional. And CRPA recently filed, and I say recently, like this was, I believe, Tuesday, right? You filed a brief or a motion asking the court to do what exactly?
Basically maintain the status quo. Remember, Duncan has been going on since 2017. We've tried it twice in front of Judge Benitez down in San Diego, won both times in front of him, won the first time around in front of a 3-judge panel, went up to an en banc 11-judge panel. We lost 7-4, went up to the Supreme Court back then before Bruin. Bruin came down, vacated the 7-4, the initial 7-4 loss in the en banc panel and told them reconsider that in light of Bruin. It went back down from the on-bank panel, back down to Judge Benitez again. That was our second trial. Then went back up to the on-bank panel. There's a whole sideshow, procedural sideshow about whether or not that was proper or whether it should have gone through a 3-judge panel first. Anyway, went back to the 11-judge panel, and we recently got the ruling 7-4 again that they found the law to be constitutional. The thing is, we had 4 very, very strong dissents, including an unprecedented video by Justice Van Dyke, where he actually got on camera and showed, here's how a gun gets taken apart.
Right.
And this is what a magazine is. And this is what he's pointing out. You know, if a magazine, the court, the en banc court tried to get around the Second Amendment by saying that the magazine is an accessory, not a component part. But everything is an accessory. And Justice Van Dyke showed, you know, here's a red dot sight. Here's a combat grip or an ergonomic grip. Here's an enhanced trigger. All these things, if you can ban an accessory by or a component by calling it an accessory, then you can ban, basically you're down to a single shot of nothing. It's the only thing that has to be protected, which is obviously preposterous. But The thing that folks have been asking about is there was 2 laws. The first one banned the acquisition of new magazines that could hold over 10 rounds. But if you had one, it was grandfathered in, so you could have them from before. And also we had this glorious Freedom Week,
right,
where people bought out tens of thousands of magazines during this 1-week period where the law was enjoined. Every magazine rack in every gun store in the state and neighboring states was cleaned out. So all those magazines were lawfully possessed too. Now, if this law goes into effect and wipes out both of those, if this decision goes into effect and wipes out both of those previous laws, then the people who have Freedom Week magazines or the people who had grandfathered magazines would be it would not be allowed to continue to possess them. That's what we're trying to maintain right now, is the status quo, which is what it's been for years. You still can't acquire new 10-round mags, but plus 10-round plus mags, but you can keep the ones you had. And so we've asked the Ninth Circuit to, when they issue a decision, when it becomes final, they issue what's called a mandate. And the mandate, we've asked them to stay the mandate. Don't issue this mandate that wipes out, that makes it illegal for people who possess the magazines previously to continue to possess them. Maintain the status quo. If you had the magazines, you can keep them legally. Still can't buy new ones. And we're trying to get rid of that one too. But maintain it so nobody's suddenly a criminal overnight because of this decision while we appeal to the United States Supreme Court. And that's where we're heading next. That brief is already being done. And I got to give credit to the NRA for helping us to finance that appeal. But in the meantime, we're hoping that the Supreme Court will take that case and set the record straight. If they don't do it in Ocean State Tactical, another magazine case they have right now, but it's fortunately that's up on a preliminary injunction, and the Supreme Court's made it kind of clear they don't like cases that are half-baked like that.
Won
in the initial stage. They want a fully developed record. They want the case to have been tried, and Duncan has been tried twice. So it is ripe for consideration by the Supreme Court. It has the record, the kind of complete record that the Supreme Court's looking for when they're looking at Second Amendment cases.
Yeah. And do I understand correctly that the state is not opposing your motion? Is that right?
That's correct. They did one thing right. They recognize what a hassle it would be to suddenly turn all these people into criminals, especially if the Supreme Court does take the case. And Duncan has been a high profile case for all along.
Almost a decade at this point, right? I mean, it's crazy.
8 years.
That's amazing.
It's very discouraging. And I know there's a lot of folks out there frustrated. Believe me, I share your frustration. The wheels of, I'm not going to call it the wheels of justice. Let's just call it the court system goes slowly. But, ultimately, this is all up to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has got the courts are doing the same thing with Bruin that they did with Heller, which is twisting the language from the case to try and uphold certain judges to try and uphold unconstitutional gun laws. And so ultimately, the Supreme Court is well aware they're going to have to weigh in somewhere and basically smack down these lower courts who are playing games with the Bruin decision.
Absolutely. Now, speaking of smackdowns, let's talk about another lawsuit that the CRPA is involved in. In fact, the lead plaintiffs in CRPA versus Los Angeles Sheriff's Department, which was the impetus now for this DOJ Civil Rights Division investigation into the policies and practices of the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department when it comes to issuing concealed carry licenses. And since that investigation was announced, Chuck, we also saw this memo released by Attorney General Pam Bondi, talking about the creation of a Second Amendment task force that is going to develop, according to her memo, litigation strategies, policy strategies to strengthen and secure the Second Amendment. So it sounds like this investigation is not a one-off, but maybe the start of a more intense and really historic effort on the part of the DOJ to start defending our right to keep and bear arms.
Absolutely. They are recognizing the Second Amendment for what it is, a fundamental constitutional right that has to be protected and that certain factions of society are trying to undermine and have been trying to undermine for a long time, including the previous White House administration. Now there's a new sheriff in town and a lot of new sheriff's deputies who are recognizing the Second Amendment for the significant constitutional right that it is and working to protect it. And I'm trying to figure out which way is east so I can genuflect to Washington, D.C. and say, thank you to everybody in the Trump administration who's working with us on this. It started with CRPA sued the Los Angeles County Sheriff and the City of Laverne. Sheriff was over 18 to 2 year delays. Remember, it's only a 2 year permit in California.
Right.
So it takes 18 months to get one. And then 18 months for a renewal, it's not going to be consistently in effect. But that's part of their plan. That's part of some jurisdictions' plan. They want to make it as hard as possible, as expensive as possible. CRPA had a bill up there to extend the period of your CCW license from 2 years to 4 years, which would at least cut all the effectively cut all the costs in half.
Yeah.
And the Assembly Public Safety Committee, some of the Dems in there, tried to kill that, saying, no, we'll just raise the price. Kind of misses the point here and really reveals them, you know, for what they are, the game they're playing, which is to try and make a CCW, a permit to carry a concealed firearm, useless by making it ineffective in over-designation of sensitive places and by making it hard to get. And so we got some great rulings from a judge in that LA County Sheriff case. Laverne has lowered its fees in response, so we'll probably settle with them. And then the judge recognized that the LA County Sheriff was taking too long. You can't take 2 years to issue a license. So we got some great rulings in there, including that out-of-state California folks from outside California have to be able to get a permit in California. Mm-hmm. So that non-resident permit system is opening up. But that got the Department of Justice's attention. And they looked at some of the things that judge found and said, hey, this is not copacetic. So they opened their own investigation into the pattern or practice that the LA County Sheriff is engaged in. And I think that's just the beginning of what the DOJ is going to do in California. It's not just California, though. It's all across the country. They'll be looking at Illinois and, you know, all the battleground states.
Yeah.
But in California, at least, they are looking into all this stuff. And we are now providing them, like LAPD takes 18 months. Santa Clara charges $2,000 for a permit. We've got lawsuits queued up to sue the LAPD and Santa County of Santa Clara. Those should be filed probably next week, because this is all part of CRPA's CCW Reckoning Project. We, right after Bruin came down, we started educating, then threatening that if they don't come in line with Bruin, they're going to be sued. And a lot of jurisdictions have. They've started issuing, even San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
But some are still dragging their feet. And gun owners didn't create this regulatory scheme. They didn't create this licensing system that's this cumbersome. If you need to hire more people to do a background check, that's on you. I mean, yeah. If you need to process applications, we didn't create the system. You want to streamline the system? Go to Sacramento and streamline the system. But most of them don't want to.
Right.
They just want to use it as an excuse for dragging their feet.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would love to see, you know, I mean, again, that's the excuse in L.A., right? That, we just don't have the staff to do this. All right. Well, that sounds like a problem for the L.A. supervisors. Exactly. And maybe a consent decree that requires the county to fully fund a licensing division would be a good first step. But, you know, I got to say, too, Santa Clara, pardon my language, I do try to keep this as family friendly as possible. It really, it frosts my cookies, Chuck. I'll say that, that they are continuing to charge so much money after we had this pay to play scandal that brought down the previous sheriff. She had to resign in disgrace about, what was it, a day or two before she got convicted by a civil jury. You've had a sheriff's captain convicted of corruption. Now, the latest round, I guess, of charges resulted in a mistrial and an acquittal for one of the individuals who was accused of bribing sheriff's officials. But it's beyond evident that there was this pay to play system, that the average concealed carry applicant had their application shoved in a drawer and forgotten about. But if you were a VIP, if you're a very important person, or you could make a donation of cash and prizes, you got moved to the front of the list. That ended with the resignation of Sheriff Lori Smith, but also with the demise of the May issue system. But then Santa Clara comes back, as you say, and just jacks up the fees so that those average everyday residents of Santa Clara County, many of them can't afford to apply.
Right. For a permit. The thing you really have to consider. I mean, you got to make a lot of money to be able to spend $2,000 on a permit that's only good for 2 years.
Yeah.
And that pay to play stuff, that cronyism, that rigged game,
mm-hmm.
It wasn't just Santa Clara. That was rampant throughout the state before Bruin came down. So, yeah, those kinds of shenanigans are the kinds of things that we're really working to put a stop to. And the nice thing about the U.S. Department of Justice being involved is, you know, when we file a lawsuit against specific defendants, the court kind of limits you in what you can look into because of those defendants. You can't really, like the California Department of Justice, I think, drags their feet too. They don't put enough people in doing these, turning these background checks around fast enough for licenses. They'll do them faster for a, you know, for a gun purchase or for a criminal investigation. You know, they can do it in no time, but they don't make it a priority to give people the license that they're constitutionally entitled to by clearing them. So we can't really get into the non-parties, but the United States Department of Justice can. So they'll be looking at not just the LA County Sheriff, but all the support structure or interrelated entities that have to work with the sheriff and other issuing agencies to process license applications. So it's a beautiful thing. And you put on top of that that the ATF just announced they're getting rid of zero tolerance for gun dealers, because they used to, you know, if you didn't write out Los Angeles, you put in LA,
right?
That would be a 4473 violation. You could lose your FFL for that.
Yeah, that was a willful violation, right?
Right. It's baloney. That zero tolerance was all just record keeping stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're doing straw sales or, you know, doing other things, you're going to lose your license. You're going to have a hearing first, and then you're probably going to lose your license. But if these paperwork errors, that's not a reason to pull somebody's livelihood. Now they're reinstituting the rights restoration process that ATF didn't have the money to fund for years. Now they've taken it away from ATF. They're giving it to DOJ, and DOJ will actually consider restoring your right to own a firearm if you're not dangerous. So you can rehabilitate your ability to possess a firearm if you would have lost it for some, you know, obscure misdemeanor or nonviolent felony or smoking pot or whatever the heck the thing was. You know, you can now petition to get your rights back, which is great news. And it's just another sign that the DOJ, the Trump administration is taking the Second Amendment seriously and respecting it.
Absolutely. Well, listen, Chuck, again, I appreciate you joining us on the program. I'm glad that you are getting some assists here from the DOJ in your effort to bring that reckoning to bear on these jurisdictions in California that refuse to recognize our Second Amendment rights. And I look forward to another update from you very soon, my friend.
Hey, help out. Join CRPA. Sign up at CRPA.org. Stay informed about what's going on in California. Keep in mind, whatever starts out here, it's not like it accidentally floats over to your state. The gun ban lobby is pushing it across the country. We are California is the laboratory for ill-conceived gun control and gun bans. And it's coming soon to a state near you. Help us stop it here before it gets into your neighborhood.
Absolutely. Chuck Michelle with the California Rifle and Pistol Association. Thanks so much, Chuck.
Thanks, Cam.
My thanks to Chuck for joining me on the program. Looking forward to having him back again here before long. Right now, let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We will start there with a case out of, I believe this is McCracken County, Kentucky, where a man has been arrested in his second animal cruelty case. And the first time around, I mean, this wasn't like, first of all, I have to say, I mean, I am an animal lover, so even if this was a case of, well, he kicked a puppy one time, I would still be incensed by that. That's just me. But that was not what happened the first time around here for this individual. Again, according to, this was WPSD, Channel 6 in Kentucky, guy by the name of David Howery, back in 2021, was sentenced to a year in jail after more than 100 neglected animals were found on his property there in Paducah. Now, he was sentenced to a year in jail. That doesn't mean, as you well know, that doesn't mean he actually spent a year behind bars, right? Time off for good behavior. Basically, you get one day credit for every day that you don't assault a correctional officer or something like that. That probably would have reduced that down to 6 months if he received any credit for time served while he was awaiting trial. Howery would have been able to be released even earlier. So the 1 year sentence doesn't mean 365 days behind bars. But even then, there were some folks in the Paducah area who were upset, felt like Howery should have been sentenced to more time back then. Well, now, apparently, he's been involved in other acts of animal cruelty. According to the Sheriff's Department there in McCracken County, there were a number of dogs recently found inside Howery's home living in what they describe as, quote, deplorable conditions. One dog was in such bad shape that it had to be euthanized there at the scene. Sheriff's Department says the house infested with fleas and rodents, stacked floor to ceiling with crates. Animals had no choice but to defecate and urinate in those crates where they were housed, essentially. Channel 6 spoke to a animal welfare advocate there in the area named Dee Robinson, who said she hopes that a recent legislation passed in Kentucky called Ethan's Law will amount to a stiffer sentence this time around. She said, intentional gross neglect. Well, what's intentional? You mean to do this? It didn't just get caught up in a cage in the woods someplace. Intentional gross neglect with restraints that cause serious injury or death is now a Class D felony, which means that Howery, if he is convicted, could be sentenced to prison instead of spending a few months in the county jail. The McCracken County Animal Control had to transfer the dogs to the McCracken County Humane Society. They were already at capacity. So they are asking for help there. If you are a Kentucky resident, you want to help out those dogs. They're looking for everything from dog beds to food, cleaning supplies. And, of course, they're looking for homes, not just for these animals that were taken in from Howery's property, but the animals that were already there in the shelter. So I got to say again, I on the one hand, I mean, I've seen cases where individuals don't even get a year in jail for an offense like this. So this wasn't the worst deal that I've seen. But if Howery is alleged to have done this again, then there's something going on here, right? Either that punishment wasn't severe enough the first time around, or perhaps Howery needs to be evaluated, see what his mental health is. And if he cannot control his impulses to take these animals in and care for these animals, maybe he can't care for himself either. And maybe it is time for the state to step in, not just to take care of these animals, maybe to take care of Howery himself. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story from South Carolina, where police say an attempted robbery turned into a shootout when the intended victim was able to fight back. This was in Richland County, South Carolina. Happened a couple weeks ago, back on March 13th. Not sure why this is just now being reported, but according to the sheriff's office there in Richland County, deputies called out to a address about multiple people being shot during an attempted robbery. When they arrived, they found one person who had already passed away with the gunshot wounds, later identified as one of the suspects in that attempted robbery. According to the sheriff's office, before the shooting began, three suspects, all of whom were armed, tried to rob a man who was sitting in his car outside of his house. The suspects opened fire first. The victim, who was armed as well, returned fire, striking one of these subjects. The victim was injured, unfortunately. He tried to drive himself to the hospital, but couldn't make it there. He was actually found not far away. He was taken to a local hospital. Looks like he is going to recover from his injuries, thankfully. The other two individuals who police believe were responsible for that robbery attempt have been taken into custody. They both fled the scene, but Sincere Glover and Nigel Anderson, both arrested and actually charged with murder because of their actions that led to the death of their alleged accomplice. At last report, they were in the local detention center there in Richland County, South Carolina. We'll see if we can get any updates for you in the days ahead. And finally today, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, a couple of teenagers in Connecticut who were recently honored at a school assembly for helping to save a woman from a burning car. This happened just a couple of weeks ago, March 29th. Nia Bost and Emil Urbanowitz are basically neighbors. They live across the street from one another. Both seniors in high school in Falls Village, I guess. Housatonic Valley Regional High is the school itself. And they were both at home on that Saturday when they heard a loud boom and a bang. Nia Bost said she looked out her bedroom window and saw that a car had hit a utility pole, had rolled over, was wrapped, or at least, you know, wires draped over the car at that point, and the car was on fire. So she called 911. She ran outside. There were already other folks who had heard that noise. They were trying to break the car window with rocks to get the passenger out, but Boris and her aunt grabbed a sledgehammer and handed it to a neighbor named Chris Mansa, who broke through the rear window, actually crawled through the back of the vehicle as smoke is now beginning to fill the interior. Meanwhile, Mance was able to pull this woman, Sarah Prentice, free, had to break the headrest, and then had to pull her from her seatbelt. again, as flames are now licking the inside of the vehicle. While that's going on, Emil Urbanowicz noticed that the power was flickering. He looked outside to see what was going on, and he saw the smoke and the pole and the wires down. He called 911 as well and then ran to a render assistance. He said, I saw it was my neighbor, and I couldn't let my neighbor die. So both of these individuals, along with other good Samaritans in the area, not waiting for those first responders to get there, but again, taking it upon themselves to save this person in need. James Vinicki is the deputy fire chief of the Cornwall Volunteer Fire Department, was at this pep rally at the high school last Friday. And he said that heroism is not just found in the fire stations. It is found in everyday people who step up when it matters. He said he remember hearing the call that the car was on fire, said he'd been in that situation before, and quote, it didn't work out so well. Vinicki did not have time to get a fire truck on scene, so he just drove directly there. And when he saw the car engulfed in flames, he thought that the driver had probably perished. But then he saw that the apprentice had been pulled out of the vehicle. That's when he described this. He then called Borsten Urbanowicz up, saying that he was there to honor these two high school students, saying they showed incredible bravery. Their quick thinking and selfless actions remind us all that real courage is not about being fearless, but stepping up when others need help the most. And thank them both for their bravery and for, quote, inspiring all of us to be the best in moments of need, saying, you made my day and you saved a life. So in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, Nia Borst and Emil Urbanowicz there in Connecticut. We thank you, along with those other good Samaritans who not in high school, not subject to a pep rally, but everybody else on scene who stepped up that day. We thank you all for your very, very good deed. Now, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company. I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. I'm looking forward to seeing you back here again soon. In fact, let's do this again tomorrow. Why not? Right? Latest Second Amendment news and information headed your way in about 24 hours or so. But you don't have to wait that long, actually. You can just check out BearingArms.com. We're keeping you up to date on all of the news you need to know when it comes to your right to keep and bear arms throughout the day. And if you like what you see, I'd encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. Just use the promo code FIGHT when you sign up, and you'll get 60% off your VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP membership. Have a great rest of your hump day Wednesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.